This is continuing coverage in the trial of Alex Murdaugh from True Crime Today.
Welcome to our continuing coverage, day number 12 in the trial of Alex Murdaugh here on the 9th of February, 2023. Let's head to the courtroom for the beginning of coverage.
Thank you. Good morning. Good morning. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Day 14. Cross-examination continues. You may proceed.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
And this will be very brief, I believe, but just very briefly, yesterday we covered that it was difficult to download the information from the vehicle because it was encrypted by the manufacturer, correct?
Yes, the encryption was done by the manufacturer.
And you essentially had to reverse engineer the device using a test vehicle.
That's correct.
And looks like you got a lot of good data out of it, but there's some of it that isn't quite clear. Like we said, that we didn't exactly know what necessarily would trigger something like a system startup.
Correct.
But some of the other ones would be pretty obvious, like engine on obviously means somebody cranked the car.
Right? Yeah, the engine was turned right on at that point.
Okay. And I'm not going to go through that spreadsheet. Again, I just wanted to clarify that. And how long did this process take you, this reverse engineering process?
Our whole analysis took just about 1 year.
Wow. It's a long time to...
It's a hard effort.
Will you be able to reuse this work on other 2021 Chevy Suburbans?
Some of the tools we developed will be reusable.
And I asked before, and I guess it's no one reached out to the manufacturer for assistance in this process?
Our group did not.
Okay. Do you know why? I mean, I think yesterday you said in the past there wasn't, they weren't very helpful, but it seems like the worst they could do is say no. Do you know why it was decided to not reach out?
For our unit, I believe that our attempt is to get the data ourselves without outside assistance. In many cases, we end up finding data that even the manufacturer doesn't know is there.
Now I want to turn to what I think a technical issue was resolved, and I'm going to show you a printout that has been marked as Defendant's Exhibit 90, and I believe you've had a chance to review this.
Yes, sir. I've reviewed this material.
And you recognize it?
Yes, this is from our results.
And what is this?
This is a list of events that were recorded from the vehicle. There was a category we called events that just listed times that something interacted or something occurred with the vehicle.
And on this printout, the only event, listed here are iPhones or something called Richard's iPhone earlier on connecting to the vehicle. Is that correct?
I see from the first page here, yeah, there's one that's labeled iPhone with a Bluetooth MAC address, and it's a device connection timestamp.
If you've seen this before in your review, and you can look at it now, do you see any, is this pretty much all device connections, phones connecting to the Bluetooth in the car?
Yes, I see other Bluetooth devices connecting as well.
And is it... Just to be clear on this, the only phone connecting in the month of June, at least, is one named iPhone that has a phone number ending in 1227. Is that correct?
The phone number itself is not listed on this page. It is the Bluetooth MAC address that it's identified by.
Okay. Is the under connected devices right above the word events where it says iPhone and there's a MAC address, is the IMSI number that's listed there, 803-942-1227, is that the phone number?
That's for the iPhone, correct.
Okay. And that's the phone that was connecting in June.
That appears to be the only one that connected in June.
Yes. Is this something that you also had to reverse engineer out of the vehicle?
Yes, all of the data we found was unknown prior to taking a look at the test vehicle.
And the event that we're looking at here, device connection, that is the phone connecting to the Bluetooth in the vehicle so that, you know, you could use it for whatever goes over the Bluetooth connection, whether it's phone calls or apps or whatever, depending on.
Yeah, and it indicates a connection event from the Bluetooth to the vehicle's infotainment system.
And up here in connected devices, does this indicate that this iPhone was, I guess, paired to the vehicle?
That's correct.
Okay. And so, in your experience, if your phone is paired to your vehicle and Bluetooth is on and it connects, that typically happens automatically when you get in and turn it on if your phone is with you?
Yeah, if there's a device that is registered, paired to the vehicle, it will automatically connect to that vehicle.
And finally, I just want to ask about, you had mentioned in your direct testimony that there's sometimes you can get location data. Were you able to get location data from the vehicle?
From the infotainment system, we had limited location data, and there was some location data recovered from the OnStar module.
And do you recall, was there any location data recovered for the day of June 7th, 2021?
There was no location data recovered on June 7th.
And in fact, there wasn't any for June 6th or June 8th either. Is that correct?
I'd have to verify those dates, but in this essence, on the day of interest in June 7th, there was no location data.
Your Honor, apologize, I forgot to please move Defendant's Exhibit 90 into evidence, I believe, without objection.
No objection.
No further questions, Your Honor.
Not from the state, Your Honor.
Thank you. You may step down.
Thank you, sir.
Call your next witness.
State calls Chris Wilson.
Do you swear or affirm the name testimony you give today will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
I do.
If you would, please, sir, be seated and state your name and spell the last name. M.
My name is James Christopher Wilson, Wilson. I go by Chris.
Good morning, Mr. Wilson.
Good morning.
If you would, tell the jury just a little bit about yourself, where you grew up, where you went to school, and what you do for a living, please.
Well, as I said a moment ago, my name is Chris Wilson. I grew up in Bamberg, about 35, 40 minutes west of here. Graduated school there. Went to school up in Spartanburg for college. Came back to Columbia to go to law school at USC. Finished law school in 1994, worked for a judge in Greenville for 1 year, and then moved back to Bamberg where I grew up to practice law, and I've been practicing law there since 1995.
Are you going to have a solo practice in a firm?
Right now it's me and one associate. I've had my own firm since 1998, and there have been varying associates that have worked with me, or at one time I had a couple partners, and one partner left, and then one partner moved, and so we split up as a result of that. But, you know, I've had my own practice since 98 with different people coming and going.
And what's the name of the practice?
Right now it's Wilson Law Group.
Wilson Law Group?
Yes, sir.
Tell the jury what kind of legal work you do, please.
I do all kind of cases, but over the last 10 to 15 years, I've primarily concentrated on just personal injury cases, people that are injured in wrecks or hurt at work, tractor trailer wrecks, especially a lot of those, personal injury cases.
Do you know the defendant?
I do.
Do you see him in the courtroom here today?
I do.
Can you point him out for the jury?
Yes, sir, redhead with the glasses over there between Mr. Griffin and Mr. Harpootlian.
Your Honor, can the record reflect he's identified the defendant?
Yes.
Tell me how you came to know the defendant.
I've known Alex since we were in high school. I think I was a year younger than him, but Bamberg and Hampton are only about 30 miles apart, and so we had several mutual friends, people that I was closer to back then, but got to know and be around him some then. We had played some ball against each other, and I think even played on the same ball team one summer. So I knew him a little bit through high school, but not much. Didn't keep in touch at all when we were in college. Started law school at the same time together, and became really close friends through law school. Lived together a little bit of that time. Finished law school. I moved to Greenville. He moved to Beaufort. And, you know, we would keep in touch some, but we were a little bit separated. And then when I moved back to Bamberg and he ultimately moved back to Hampton, we got much, much closer. Our wives had known each other through college, and so they became closer friends. Our kids grew up together. You know, we just spent a lot of time together personally, and then he and I did a number of cases together. We worked professionally together.
Did y'all become close friends over the years?
Yes, sir.
Best friends?
Yes, sir. I considered him to be one of my best, if not my best friend. Yes, sir.
You get to know his family?
Very much. Not just his wife, not just Maggie, not just Paul, but, you know, Buster and his parents, you know, his in-laws, his brothers and sisters, his mom and daddy. I mean, the whole family. And they knew my family, or he knew my family.
Y'all did things together socially?
Yes, sir. We had kids the same age. Our kids are close. We did a lot of things together, and we worked together.
Up until about June of 2021, did you talk to the defendant almost every day?
Yes, sir. I didn't see Alec all the time, not every day, maybe not even once a week, but we talked by phone probably pretty much every day, several times a day sometimes. Sometimes just about, you know, Gamecocks and football and baseball and whatever, sometimes about kids, sometimes about business, sometimes about cases we were working on. It's all kind of stuff.
Did you feel like you knew him pretty well?
I did.
You mentioned y'all worked some cases together. How many cases together did you work over the years?
Well, my firm, when I first started out by myself, was smaller. I didn't have a lot of resources. I was just getting started. His firm was bigger with a lot more resources and a lot more lawyers. They handled some bigger cases that I really wasn't capable of handling together on my own. And so when it first started out, I was associating him and his firm a lot more often, probably over the course of, you know, these last 20 years, probably 25 or 30 cases. But it slowed down. I mean, as my firm got bigger and I became more experienced and could handle a lot more things on my own, it was less and less often that I would associate his firm. But if I ever felt like it could benefit my client with either the type of case that I was handling or where the case was going to be brought to have his firm involved, I would call Alec.
How many times do you think you worked a case with him or shared a case with him over the years?
Probably 30, maybe more.
When did that start, do you think?
I didn't do it any until I opened my own office in 98. And I don't remember exactly when he moved back to Hampton from Beaufort, but it was probably starting in the early 2000s or somewhere thereabouts.
And were all of these plaintiff's cases, were y'all representing a plaintiff who had had some alleged injuries or something like that, or suffered some sort of harm?
Yes, sir. I mean, there may have been, you know, one or two here or there that was something different than a personal injury case, but almost everything was personal injury cases.
And were all these cases worked on contingency?
Yes, sir.
And can you explain to the jury what a contingency is, how a lawyer gets paid with a contingency type case?
Sure. A contingency fee is basically the attorney and the client enter into an agreement on the front end of the case when the client retains the attorney. There are no attorney's fees up front. There's no prepayment. There's no hourly billing arrangement. Basically, the attorney has an interest in the case so that when the case resolves, the attorney receives as a fee a portion of the recovery. Generally, it's a third, sometimes 40%, depending on whether suit has to be filed or what type of case it is. But basically, the lawyer is taking all the risk in pursuing the case. If it doesn't work out well, Lawyer doesn't get paid for their time, and generally the lawyer fronts all the costs in pursuing the case for court fees, depositions, experts, all of that type of stuff. And so at the end, if there's a recovery, the attorneys repaid their fee contingent on a successful outcome and repaid whatever costs are advanced in the case.
Those costs and expenses, the cost of litigating the case, hiring an expert, travel, taking depositions, court costs, things like that?
Yes, it gets very expensive.
Do those come out of the lawyer's 33% or 40% of the recovery, or are those recovered separately from the lawyer's fee?
Separately and in addition to the fee.
Okay. In the cases that you've worked with Alec over the years, was he with PMPED during those cases?
Yes, sir. I don't believe I associated him on any cases when he was in Buford. It was not until he returned to Hampton.
If you are in your firm and Alec is in his firm and y'all are sharing a case and ultimately you're successful, there's a settlement, there's a trial verdict, and you get a recovery, how do you go about splitting that fee?
All of that's agreed to up on the front at the beginning of the case. So, for instance, a client comes in and hires me for whatever reason, whatever type case. If I look at it and decide that I could use some help, either because there's a lawyer that knows that area of law better than I do, or maybe they're more local to the case, or maybe I just need some extra manpower, whatever it is. When I associate that lawyer and his firm, we make an agreement at the beginning as to what the fee split will be, and the client approves that and signs off on it. It's generally 50-50 on almost all the cases. I think on every case I ever worked with this firm, it was a 50-50 split on the fees.
In those cases that you worked with Alec over the years up until one at the end, did your office typically handle the disbursement of the fees when the settlement money came in?
Yes, sir. I mean, I've gone back through all my files, and with the exception of one or two cases that I think were a little bit different than normal, his firm had part of the family who had lost a loved one, and I had part of the family that had lost a loved one. And instead of them having a dispute about who was going to control and handle the case, we decided to work together, and so the firms worked together. And everything may have gone through them on those cases, but on cases that I associated his firm on, that I went to them to bring them into the case, I would generally handle the disbursements, yes, sir.
All right, and when we say handle the disbursements, does that mean your office would handle actually cutting the checks to the client as well as to his firm for their share of the lawyer's fees as well as their share of any expenses to be reimbursed?
Yes, sir. When the money would come in, whether it was by a settlement or a verdict that had been paid, the money would come to my office, and it would have to sit in my account for the appropriate amount of time. And then when checks were ready to be written, I would write the checks to his firm for their fees and for their cost, to my firm for my fees and my cost, to any medical bills or liens or anything had to be paid, and to the client for their money.
And you would write the checks for his share of the fees to the firm, is that correct?
Yes, sir, to PMPED. Peters, Murdoch, Parker, Dietrich, and Ellsroth.
When you would write those checks to his firm, would there be one check or two? Would you put the fees and his share of reimbursed costs in one check together, or would you write two separate checks?
Starting out, I think we would include, not just for his firm but for my firm, fees and cost would be in the same check. And then more than 10 years ago or so, and maybe even longer than that, we started doing it in two separate checks just to keep the accounting of it easier, to keep up with what part of payment was fees and what part of the payment was cost. So over the last 15 years, it's been two checks.
Do you have a staff member who helps you? It's kind of your main staff member that might handle some of these disbursements?
I have several different staff people that help me handle cases and disbursements. I have a bookkeeper that keeps up with the checking accounts and writes all the checks that I instruct her to write, and then I'm the only person with signatory authority. And I have a staff member that helps me work cases and actually helps me put together disbursement sheets and check medical lien balances and who's owed what money and those type things.
And who is that person you're referring to?
Vicky is the person that helps me do all of that.
Do you ever call to work a case with a defendant involving Mack Trucks?
Yes, sir. I contacted Ellick and his firm to get involved and work with me and another lawyer on a case involving Mack Trucks.
All right. And tell the jury just a little bit about the case without getting into too much detail. What kind of case was it?
Sure. So lawyer contacted me about a wreck that a client of his had been involved in. A drive shaft out of a Mack truck had fallen into the interstate as the vehicles were traveling down the road. This gentleman's vehicle, along with a bunch of other vehicles, hit this drive shaft, and he was injured. And so this lawyer, it was a trucking case when he first contacted me and looked at it, and that's a lot of what I do. So he called me for some help with that.
Okay. And so you got involved in this particular case?
I did.
As you looked at the particular case, did you decide to involve the defendant?
I did. Very quickly after looking at it, this other lawyer and I both realized that this case was probably a products liability case, that the drive shaft shouldn't have just fallen out of the truck for no reason like that, and that there might be something to do with a defect in the truck. And we found some information about a recall or a potential recall, and I knew that's what Ellick and his firm specialized in, those type cases, so I called him and asked him to get involved. We were pushing some deadlines to bring in all the parties that we needed to, so it was important to get somebody involved in it fast and knew what they were doing.
And did he agree to get in on this particular case?
Yes, sir.
So you got three attorneys in there who are going to split the fee, is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Tell the jury again, without getting too much into the weeds, tell the jury a little bit about how the litigation went. Did y'all ultimately try the case and kind of set up how y'all ultimately got to that point?
Sure. So we actually brought two cases. We brought one case for the wife of the gentleman that was injured in the wreck for what are called loss of consortium claims. That generally is just the loss of a spouse. Their loss of the services of their other spouse. Maybe that spouse can't do all the things around the home they used to do, or they can't be quite the husband or the wife that they were before. So we brought a claim for the wife for loss of consortium, and we brought a separate case for the husband for his personal injuries. Not to get too technical, but the wife's case, Mack Trucks didn't answer the papers like they were supposed to, and so they went into default on that case, and that put them in a really bad spot. On the husband's case, they answered the papers and initially contested the case. But after getting Ellick and his firm involved in the case, we started doing discovery, which means we were asking for a bunch of documentation and things. And I'm not sure that they just didn't want us looking any further. And so they reached out to us, and we had communications with them about ways to try to pursue the case outside of the traditional going through all of that and going to a jury trial. COVID had hit, and so things were slowed up in the court, and ultimately we reached an agreement to try both of those cases together in front of a judge without a jury. Both parties waived any rights to appeal. Mack Trucks admitted liability, and we agreed to waive punitive damages. I think that's the structure we tried it under.
Let me ask you two quick questions about that. You said that COVID had hit, and like the rest of the world, that had slowed up everything in court, correct?
Very much.
And you know, think some things were moving, but because things were slowed up in court, that might slow up the ability to get verdicts and settlements and that sort of thing. To some extent, COVID had an effect on everybody. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
All right. And then you mentioned in this particular case, you ultimately agreed for both parties to waive the right to appeal. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
And did that have the effect of meaning that whatever verdict was issued, it wouldn't be tied up in the courts for a long time? The money would go ahead and be paid?
Yes, sir.
Did y'all eventually try that case in front of a judge instead of a jury?
We did in January of 2021, January. First couple weeks.
Okay. And did the defendant try that case with you?
He did.
Okay. And did y'all ultimately get a verdict?
We did. We got verdicts in both cases.
Okay. And do you remember how much those verdicts were?
Combined, they were $5.5 million. I believe it was $4 million on the husband's case. He had passed away, I believe, within about 4, 5, or 6 months of us going to trial. So I think it was $4 million on behalf of his estate for his injuries and what that had cost for him. And then I believe it was $1.5 million on the wife's loss of consortium.
Who did the closing argument in that case?
Ellick did.
For y'all's side?
Ellick did.
The defendant did?
Yes, sir.
Did he get emotional in closing?
He did.
Did he spend much time with the husband in that case?
I don't think Alec had spent a lot of time with the gentleman. He had been kind of sick towards the end, and I don't know that Alec had spent a lot of time with him. He had spent a lot of time with the wife, and especially throughout that week in trial. I mean, it was an emotional case. They had serious loss.
Closing argument, that's when the lawyer gets up and sort of summarizes the case to the judge or the jury, depending on what kind of case it is?
Yes, sir. Honestly, you do more than summarize. You argue.
You argue.
Yeah, you put your heart into it, and you tell the judge or the jury why it is you think, why it is you hope and think they do what you're asking them to do.
You said the verdict was how much in total?
$5.5 million combined.
And what does that mean the fees were going to be for the three lawyers involved in this case?
I don't remember the exact split. For everybody, I know that my fee was going to be like $791,000, and the fee payable to Alec's firm was going to be $792,000.
And y'all, do you recall?
And I don't remember the third attorney right off the top of my head.
Do you remember when you received that $5.5 million into your trust account?
Yes, sir. Part of it came in by wire, but it was a smaller part. And I want to say that was about, we tried it in the first part of January. The judge didn't issue a ruling right on the spot. It took a couple weeks for him to issue his ruling, which is normal. And then within a couple weeks of that, after some back and forth with Mack Truck's attorney about whether they were going to file any kind of post-trial motions, or they could have tried to file an appeal and see where it went, even though we had an agreement up front, we were worried that they might get around that. But anyway, after a couple weeks of back and forth and a wire was sent for part of the money, right, probably middle of February, and then shortly after that, a check arrived for the rest of the money.
Do you remember when that was?
I don't remember exactly. I want to say the last few days of, no, it's probably the last few days of February, somewhere around in there.
What year?
2021.
Hold on 1 second.
Your Honor, for the record, I just want to object to this line of questioning under 404, 403, and to this exhibit. I do not have any additional objections other than those that were previously made.
I don't know what the exhibit is.
Yes, sir. Sure.
Your Honor, this is just a text, but it's related to the in-camera matters that have been addressed.
Over objection.
All right, I'm going to show you what's been marked as an admitted into evidence as States 450 and see if you recognize that document, please.
Yes, sir. This looks like a snapshot of a text string that I would have provided that is just communication between me and Alec.
All right. And in the middle of that particular text, that particular page, there's some text. And do you see the date on that?
March the 10th. This would be 2021.
All right. And that's a text from the defendant. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. It looks like we had been talking about getting together to play golf. And then he texted me, you want me to read it?
Go ahead and read that to the jury, what your text conversation right there is.
March 10th, I need to get checked today. If it's just too much for you, I will deal with it.
All right, and what's your response?
I'm working on it.
So that's March 10th of 2021, is that correct?
Yes, sir.
May I have the element, please? All right, well, let's talk about that text a little bit. So does that text help you kind of get an idea of roughly when the disbursement check came in on the Mack truck case?
Yes, sir. So by our rules, the Supreme Court, any check that's of a certain size has to be in your trust account for at least 10 days before you could disperse. And this was a sizable check, so I was going to wait more than 10 days just to make sure there weren't any problems. So if that's March the 10th, you know, like I said, those checks, the final amount of that money would have come in sometime, you know, towards the end of February. Because I think I waited 12 to 15 days, as I recall.
You said it's a sizable amount of money. This was a pretty big recovery, correct?
Yes, sir.
I imagine you contacted the other attorney and you contacted the defendant to say, hey, got the money in.
I did.
Did you when you contacted the defendant about that, what, if anything, did he say?
You know, great news, good. I told him that I was going to sit on it a little bit longer than normal to disperse, just because if it had all come in a wire, I could have dispersed immediately because those are considered received funds. But with it being a check, I wanted to wait. And so I let both of them know that I had received the money and that I wasn't going to do it on the 10th day, but that I would do it shortly thereafter.
Did the defendant ask you to do anything when it came time to dispersing his firm's share of the funds?
He did, yes, sir.
All right, tell me about that conversation.
When it came time to disperse the checks and I was calling him and the other lawyer to let him know that I'd have the checks ready, I guess somewhere around March the 10th, Alec told me that he was going to put the monies into an annuity, that he was going to put his fees in an annuity. He called it a structure, but in essence, he explained he was going to put those monies into an annuity and that the checks needed to be made payable directly to him instead of to his firm so that he could do that.
Okay. And did he explain to you why he was going to do that?
He had just indicated that he was putting money away. He indicated he was concerned about the boat case. And that he was going to put some monies in an annuity or into a structure.
You say he was concerned about the boat case. What exactly was he concerned about? What did he tell you he was concerned about?
He was concerned about his exposure in the boat case.
In a civil lawsuit?
Yes, sir.
And you were aware that the defendant had been sued civilly in the boat accident case?
I didn't know if he had been sued himself, but I knew there was a lawsuit going on involving, and I believe I did know that he was himself sued at that time, yes, sir.
So this was different than how you normally did things, correct?
Very much.
Did he have any further explanation to you as to why this would be okay, why this was all right to do?
He told me that he had already cleared it with the partners in his firm. I mean, he was a partner himself with the authority to do things for the firm, but he told me he had already cleared it with his partners in the firm and that they were going to put the monies on the books and that they would be accounted for at the end of the year, whenever they did their year-end settle up, that he would already be accounted for as having been paid these monies already.
Looking back at this exhibit that's now up on the screen, on March 10th, exhibit 450, he says, I need to get the check today. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
And did he tell you any more about why he needed to get the check today?
I spoke to him on the phone that day, and he just asked me if the checks were going to be ready that day. As I recall, I was on the road. I wasn't sure I was going to make it back to the office or not. My bookkeeper was getting the checks ready, and I spoke to him on the phone and told him that if I got back in time to sign the checks, I'd have them ready that day. He told me he'd like to get them that day. Yes, sir.
He told you that he had already cleared this with the partners. They were okay with him getting this money right now instead of having to wait till the end of the year.
He told me that the partners were aware that the monies were being paid to him, that he was going to put them into annuities, and that they would be accounted for on the books of the firm as already having been credited as paid towards him.
Did you believe the defendant when he told you these things?
Yes, sir. I didn't have any reason not to.
Your best friend?
Yes, sir.
Did you trust him?
I did.
Didn't set off any red flags to you at this point?
No, sir. And I'd known him for 30 plus years and didn't have any reason not to trust him.
Did you ultimately initially write a couple of fee checks?
I did, yes, sir. I think I wrote one check in the gentleman's case and one check in the lady's case. And then the gentleman's check was rewritten into two checks. These were, when I say these checks, I'm talking about fees that were paid.
Okay. I'm going to show you what's previously been marked as State's Exhibit 345. You said there, the total fees that were going to go to Alec in this case were how much?
$792,000.
And he asked you to write the checks out to who?
To him.
Him directly?
Him, Richard Alexander Murdoch.
Instead of what?
Instead of PMPED or the law firm.
Which would be the normal practice.
Yes, sir.
All right. I'm going to show you what's been marked as 345 and see if you recognize this document. States 345.
I do.
All right. What is that?
So this is a check that was initially written to Richard Alexander Murdoch Esquire for $600,000 on March 10th, 2021. This says fees on the bottom. This would be the fees on the gentleman's case for payable to his firm, which Alec told me to write to him. This check was voided and rewritten into two separate checks.
All right.
It's marked void.
All right, Your Honor, this time I would move to admit States 345 in evidence.
Your Honor, we do not have any additional objections to that document.
It's admitted.
This check is made out for how much?
$600,000.
All right. And again, there were two cases, so there were going to be two separate checks. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. This was just the fees on the gentleman's case.
And that was going to be how much total?
Total was $792.
But this one is?
$600.
And then the one for the other one?
$192.
$192. Okay. All right. And so you initially write this check. Did you deliver this to the defendant, or what happened?
I didn't deliver any of the checks. I believe he had somebody pick them up that day from his office, a runner or something like that. But no, so this check was voided out, and we rewrote two separate checks made payable to Richard Alexander Murdoch.
Why did you do that? Why did you void this one for $600 and then write two separate checks?
When I called Alec and told him, when we were talking and I told him I thought the checks would be ready, he instructed me that he was doing three separate annuities, and so it would need to be in three checks, and that this check would need to be made out in two different checks that totaled $600,000.
Okay, this reason a bunch of different annuities, huh?
Yes, sir. It wasn't all going into the same annuity or the same place.
So you recut into two checks, is that correct?
Yes, sir.
All right, I'm going to show you what's been marked as States 346 and see if you recognize that set of documents, please.
Yes, sir, I do.
All right, just flip through it real quick.
Yeah, you can tell you what they are.
Well, just flip through it first, if you would, please.
Yes, sir, I recognize all of this.
All right, and tell the jury what those are, please.
So the top document is the $192,000 check dated March the 10th, 2021, made payable to Richard Alexander Murdoch Esquire. And on the bottom it says fees. That would have been the fees on the lady's loss of consortium case.
Okay.
The back of it, the rest of it's just the back of the check. Mm-hmm. Looks like it's endorsed Bank of America deposit only. A signature that looks like Alec, but it's kind of scribbled and says Bank of America.
Okay.
The next page is a check for $225,000 dated March 10th, 2021, payable to Richard Alexander Murdoch Esquire. And on the bottom it says fees. This would be part of the rewrite of that $600,000 check.
All right.
Same
type of endorsement paperwork on the back. And then the third check is a check dated March 10th, 2021 for $375,000 made payable to Richard Alexander Murdoch Esquire. And on the bottom it says fees. And that would be the second part of the rewrite of that $600,000 check for the fees in the gentleman's case.
Your Honor, at this time, I would move to admit States 346 in evidence.
We don't have any additional objections, Your Honor.
They're admitted.
All right, I'm going to show you what's been marked as States 347. See if you recognize those two documents, please.
I do.
All right, tell me what those are.
So these are two checks from my firm made payable to Peters, Murdoch, Harker, Ellsworth, and Dietrich. The memo part is redacted, but I know what these are. So these were cost reimbursement checks in both of these cases. One check for the gentleman's case and one check for the wife's case. They're dated May 13th of 2021, made payable to the law firm. One of them is for $14,619.13. And one of them is for the same amount except for 14 cents.
All right, tell me the date on those expense checks, please.
May 13th of 2021.
And go back, if you would, and let's again remind the jury what the date of the fee checks are, particularly after they were recut at the defendant's request.
March 10th of 2021.
All right. Let me put these up on the screen real quick. Your Honor, I'll move in States 347, please.
No objection.
They're admitted.
All right, we're at States 346, and this is the check for $192,000, is that correct?
Yes, sir.
And the date is March 10th, is that right?
Yes, sir. That's the day that all three lawyers' checks were cut to be paid.
Same day that that text the jury has seen, correct?
Yes, sir.
Next page, this is the check for how much?
$225,000.
And that's part of the 600K?
Yes, sir.
Same date?
Yes, sir, March the 10th.
And that's your signature on there?
It is.
Going back to the first one, you said that looks like whose handwriting?
Yes, sir.
Whose?
Alex.
Right there on the second check on the back, that looks like whose handwriting to you?
I mean, the top left of it looks like Alex's signature.
Okay. And then finally, this last check, that's the $375,000 that's part of the $600,000?
Yes, sir.
Is that your signature right there on the check?
It is.
And the same date?
Yes, sir, March 10th.
And do you recognize that signature at all?
I mean, it looks like Alex, but I mean,
best as you can see on this.
Best I can tell, yes, sir.
Okay. All right, what those particular checks, what did you, once those were cut, the defendant's been texting you about it, what did you do once you recut them?
I think, as I said a little earlier, at some point in time we were having a phone conversation and I told him that I was on the road, that if I got back and was able to sign them, I'd let him know. Mm-hmm. And I ultimately did make it back to the office, I believe, that day, was able to get the check signed and either called him and said they're ready, and he said, I'll send somebody up to get them. Or maybe I called him as I was going back to the office, but before I actually signed them, and said, hey, I will be back to sign them and they'll be ready. And he said, well, I'm going to send somebody up to get them. Okay. And so they would have come up. I think he had a runner come up that day that would have picked up a package that had those checks. I don't remember exactly for sure, but generally it's going to be those checks, a cover letter, and a package that has a partial disbursement sheet. Our client had signed off on allowing the fees to go ahead and be paid. Then while we were waiting on some liens to resolve themselves, some costs to come in, and some things like that. So our client had signed off on a partial settlement statement and I would have provided that.
The voided check we saw before and these checks all have the same date, is that correct?
Yes, sir, they do.
All right, and do you recall anything about that? Did you call him up and say, hey, great news, I got it taken care of? He said, wait, how did that go down?
I don't remember. I don't remember how many different conversations we had that day, whether it was over, one conversation or two conversations, I don't remember, but at some point he instructed me that the $600,000 check needed to be made into separate checks.
And he sent somebody to pick them up?
I didn't mean to cut you off. We talk a lot every day. And so we probably had multiple conversations that day, but at some point he instructed me to do that.
He's one of your best friends.
Yes, sir, very much. Not just my best friend, Mr. Waters. I mean, our families were close. I mean, our kids, our wives, I mean, we're close.
You had friendship with Maggie, too.
Yes, sir. Very much.
You had friendship with Paul, too.
Yes, sir.
You had friendship with Buster, too.
Yes, sir. Haven't been able to have that since. Not like it was, but yes, sir. Hope to one day. But yes, sir.
Why didn't you disperse the fee checks the same day? Do you recall?
The fee checks were dispersed.
I'm sorry, my bad.
Cost
checks. Expense checks, the cost checks.
Yes, sir. We were still waiting on some costs to come in, and we had several experts in that case, and it's not abnormal to have costs that come in after a settlement or after a verdict that you reach. Sometimes you're taking depositions up to the last minute. Sometimes you have experts that are working, they're going to send you their bill for their trial time. And so a lot of times those costs will come in. I think our client had authorized us to hold some money back in escrow for an expected cost. And so we had a lot of bills that were coming in even into late April.
You mentioned that the defendant had said something about his exposure in the boat accident lawsuit as a reason for structuring these fees.
Yes, sir.
Did he say any more about that?
Not in that conversation when he asked me to write the checks directly to him. We had had some other conversations, and I don't remember if they were before this or after this. I think they were after, but I don't remember for sure where he had just said that there was, you know, some fights going on between insurance companies.
When the defendant asked you to do this unusual step and write the fees direct to him, and you said you trusted him, correct?
Yes, sir.
What was your general perception of his law practice, of his wealth, of his financial security, knowing him as well as you did? What was your perception of that?
Big firm, big reputation. Ellick had a big reputation. I thought he made a whole lot more money than I did. Everything I knew from the way his partners treated him, the type of cases I saw him working on with them, the type of cases I knew he worked on with me, that he was, you know, one of the biggest dogs in that firm, one of the biggest producers they had. You know, seemed to own a lot of things, do a lot of things, spend money, didn't ever seem to have problems. And I knew I was associating him and his firm on very good cases throughout the years, and I knew other lawyers that were. Just seemed like they were doing very well, and that he specifically was doing very well.
And is that perception that you had of him one of the reasons why you trusted him, that there was no shenanigans going on?
I don't know that that's the main reason. I trusted him because I knew him and had dealt with him personally and professionally for a long time. But I had no idea if he was having money problems. I mean, I would have never suspected that his asking me to write checks to him had anything to do with money problems on his behalf. Nothing gave that appearance. So, I mean, that could have factored into the back, but mostly it's just I knew the guy and I trusted him. And he wasn't asking me to do anything that raised any flags with me. He told me he had cleared it with his firm and with his partners. I didn't have any reason to doubt that.
I'm going to put States 347 up on the screen, and what are these again?
That's a cost reimbursement check in one of those cases. I can't tell you which one it is.
All right. And then if we go two pages back, this is the other check?
Yes, sir, in the other case, cost reimbursement.
All right, and those are the same amount?
One penny difference. I think Alec sent me the cost total, and I just split them evenly between the two cases.
And what's the date on that check, those checks?
May 13th of 2021, which I believe would be about, would be the time, obviously, we wrote the checks, and they would have been mailed to his office shortly thereafter.
And you said that there was a reason why these came a couple of months later?
Yes, sir.
You were waiting for some information?
Waiting on cost to finalize up. Instead of writing multiple checks as cost came in, we just kind of wait sometimes till the final bill's received.
Is that your signature on these checks?
Yes, sir.
And those would have been mailed to Alex's law firm, correct?
That's the general practice, yes, sir, as we mail them to the firm. And I don't know any reason why these wouldn't have been done differently.
In May of 2021, did your office, after these checks were mailed, did your office receive any communication from the defendant's law firm?
My paralegal, Vicky, received an email from Alex's paralegal, okay. Annette.
And tell me about that. What was the communication? It was received from Annette?
Yes, sir, from Annette Griswold, Alex paralegal.
All right. Your paralegal, Vicky, received a communication from Annette Griswold, the defendant's paralegal.
Yes, sir. Vicky got an email from Annette that said, hey, we got the something to the effect of, hey, we received the cost checks, either why no fee checks or where are the fee checks.
Okay. And did Vicky respond to that?
She did.
What did she What did she respond?
She responded to Annette that the reason the fee checks weren't included is because they had already been paid to Alec, that he had already received the fee checks.
Was that on about May 19th, 2021?
I'd have to look at the email, but I believe so, yes, sir.
Did Vicky raise any issue with you at this point? Did you know anything about it at this point?
No, sir. Okay. I was in trial the following week in Hampton, actually all week long, and I was preparing for that. Vicky sent that email back. She didn't notify me about that actually until all this blew up, and I turned all that over to SLED after we found it, after all this blew up in September.
Moving into late May 2021, did this matter that Annette was raising with your firm come to your attention?
It did.
And tell me.
And it wasn't late May, it was the first part of June.
I'm going to show you what's been marked as Exhibit 348, and let you take a look at that real quick before we move on.
Sure.
See if you recognize that.
I do.
Tell me what that is.
So this is the this is an email string that begins on May the 27th from Jeannie Seckinger, which is the bookkeeper or accountant in Alec's law firm. And it's an email from Jeannie to Annette Griswold, Alec's paralegal, on May the 27th, where she telling Annette that she got the expense checks and it didn't match their records, that Alec thought he had more outstanding costs but can't say what, and was asking Annette to reach out to my office, to Vicky, to get some more information. And then it looks like Annette forwarded that email to Vicky on May the 27th. Vicky was on vacation and did not come back in until the following week. It looks like she emailed her again on June 2nd. Vicky might have come back in on like June the 1st, or I think May the 31st was Memorial Day, a Monday, and so June the 1st would have been when Vicky came back in. So Annette emailed her again on June the 2nd and asked for some information, and then Vicky emailed her back and said, since this involves documents she didn't deal with, which was bookkeeping stuff that she didn't deal with, she would forward it to me.
Yeah. And so that happened on what day?
June the 2nd.
Of what year?
2021.
Your Honor, this time I'd offer States 348 into evidence.
No additional objections, Your Honor.
Admit it.
All right, and so this is going
Going to the bottom, this is the email from Jeannie to Annette, is that right?
Yes, sir.
And then that gets sent from Annette to Vicki on May 27th, correct?
Yes, sir.
And then she gets back from vacation, and then she responds on June 2nd, 2021, correct?
Yes, sir.
And what does she say?
She's going to forward that to me. And she did. She CC'd me up in the email string.
All right. And did you have a conversation with Vicki at that time about this issue?
I did.
What'd you tell Vicki? Or what was y'all's conversation?
She said, I've gotten this email from them asking about the cost in this case. What do you want me to do? And I said, tell them that you'll forward it to me and I'll deal with it.
Around this time, had you had any conversation from any other partners in PMPD, the defendant's law firm?
As best I recall, Mr. Waters, I was in Hampton the entire week before, and I was working out of their office. I was trying a case down there like the week of May the 24th, and I was working out of Alex Firm's office. Lee Cope approached me and said, hey, I need to talk with you about this back truck case. Has all the money been dispersed? I said, Lee, it hadn't all been dispersed. We've got some liens, some medical liens we're waiting on to deal with. We've got some cost that we're waiting on to come in, and it all hadn't been dispersed, but I don't know off the top of my head. I'll have to check on it. And I was stuck in trial through Friday of that, or through Thursday of that week.
Did you reach out to the defendant after Lee had that conversation with you?
I reached out to him after I got this email.
All right. And tell me what your conversation was with him when you reached out to him, having received this email from Vicki asking about these fees.
I called Alec. I said, Alec, I got this email from your firm. They're asking about issues with costs that you think you've got more costs that are owed to you. I put down on the settlement statement and wrote checks for the amount of costs that you gave me. But if there are more costs outstanding, you know, just figure out what they are, because we've been holding some money back. And I think at that point we were waiting on a medical lien to resolve. And I don't think the client will have a problem paying the cost out of what we're holding back.
Did you have any discussion about the disbursement of the fees at that point?
I did. I said,
tell me about that.
I said, Alec, this is the case that you asked me to write the fee checks directly to you. Is everything all right? And he said, yeah, everything's fine. I just need to make sure my partners know that this is the same case, that you wrote the checks to me, and that it's already on the books.
Did you believe him?
Yes, sir.
After you had that conversation with the defendant, did you do anything else, or did you think it was handled? Because you had spoken to your best friend, Alec Murbach.
He told me it was taken care of. He told me he had talked with his partners about it. I didn't think there was any other problem. I didn't do anything else.
A couple weeks later, did you have another conversation with him about the same issue?
Yes, sir. This would have been after June the 7th, yes, sir. And it might have been more than a couple weeks, because I didn't ask him anything after Paul and Maggie. I didn't want to. I asked him if everything was all right, and he said it was fine.
You got that email forwarded to you from Vicki on June the 2nd. Did you call Alec that day?
I think it was that day.
Thereabouts?
Yes, sir.
Remember June 7th, 2021?
Yes, sir.
Was that a Monday?
Yes, sir.
Team Cox had played some baseball that weekend. You'd yes, seen the defendant?
I'd seen him and Maggie and Buster, my wife and I, and our children. Had been with him and Maggie and Buster the weekend before Saturday, yes, sir.
On Monday, June 7th, 2021, what was your day like just during the day?
I went to work. I was in the office most of the day. I think I had something scheduled that it canceled out. And I ate lunch with a friend, and I live in Columbia, even though I practice in Bamberg. Kind of later in the day, I ran by the pharmacy, picked something up, and then headed to Columbia and stopped to pick something up at the store on the way home.
Went home?
Yes, sir.
Normal evening?
Yes, sir.
Remember what you were doing that evening?
Just hanging out with my wife and, I mean, I don't remember how many of our kids were home, but I think just our youngest. Just watching TV.
Watching TV?
Yes, sir. I mean, I was kind of late getting home, so there wasn't a whole lot of the evening left.
That evening, did the defendant call you?
Yes, sir, he did.
About what time did he call you?
I don't remember exactly. I mean, I turned my phone records over, but I think it was around 9:20.
Before we talk about that, I'm going to show you States 451. Do you recognize that?
I do. Yes, sir.
What is that?
This is my phone log that I turned over to SLED.
Does that reflect calls from Alec Murdoch on the night of June 7th, 2021?
Yes, sir.
Well, tell me.
To and from. Yes, sir.
Well, tell me what you were doing when you first received a call from Alec Murdoch that night.
I remember my wife and I were sitting on the back porch. We have a TV on the back porch. We were sitting back there on the couch talking, watching The Bachelor. Can't believe I was watching that. The phone rang. It was Alec. I had actually stepped off the porch, and the pool pump is on the side of the porch, and I was trying to mess with something with the pool pump. Sounded like it was running funky, and so the phone rang, and it was Alec, and I answered the phone.
What did he say?
He said, "Hey, you know, hey, Bo," is normally how he would greet you, "hey, Bo." And I don't remember if he said, "What are you doing?" or what. I pretty quickly told him, "Hey, I've got my hands in the middle of this pool pump messing up. Can I call you right back?"
Did you sound normal to you?
Sounded normal, yes, sir.
So you said, "Hey, I'm busy right now. Let me call you back."
I did, yes, sir.
And what did he say?
Said, "That's fine. No problem."
And having that exhibit in, Your Honor, I apologize. I'd move. States 451 into evidence at this time.
Submit it.
And having a chance to look at your phone records there, what time was that first call?
Looks like it was at 9:11 p.m. incoming from his cell phone.
All right, so you got off.
2 minute phone call.
2 minute phone call.
Yes,
sir. So you got off the phone. What happened next?
I finished trying to fix the pool pump. Called Alec back.
All right. And what time was that?
9:20 p.m.
Tell me about that conversation. Tell the jury about that conversation.
Called Alec back. I generally say, "Hey, Bo," too. And, you know, "Hey, Bo, calling you back." He said, "Hey, I'm about to get to my mom's house. Can we talk a little bit later?" And I told him, "Sure." There were a couple of things I needed to talk with him about, cases that we were, well, one case that we were working on and one case that I had going on. I wanted a little advice. You know, ask him how his mama was doing, and I asked him how his daddy was doing because I knew his dad was getting a lot worse. We had talked about that over the weekend at the baseball game in Columbia, and I think we had talked on the phone on Sunday also. So he said, "Can I call you back or can we talk later?" And I said, "Sure."
You said his daddy was getting worse. Had he called you that day, Monday at all, to give you any updates to your recollection?
I don't think we talked earlier in the day on that Monday, but we had talked on that Saturday before and on that Sunday before. And so I knew his father was getting worse, and I think I knew that he was either going to or had already gone to the hospital.
So that second call, was that also very brief? He said, hey, I'm at my mama's.
3 minutes.
So what happened after that? You still watching TV?
Still watching TV, yes, sir.
Did you talk to the defendant again?
I did. He, I believe, texted me sometime later that evening. And I think the text was something, are you still up or still up, something like that.
All right. Stand by for me real quick.
Sure.
We'll show you what's been marked as States 452 and see if you recognize that document.
Yes, sir. This is a snapshot of text communications between me and Alec that I snapshot and provided.
All right. Your Honor, this time I'd move States 452 into evidence.
No objection.
Submit it.
452. This is a screenshot of the text that you, of your text that you provided, is that correct?
Yes, sir.
All right, and we see down at the bottom, is that a text? Who is that text from?
That's from Alec to me at 9:52 on June the 7th. It says, call me if you up.
Okay. Did you receive that text? Were you still awake at that point?
Yes, sir, I was.
All right, and what did you do?
Picked up the phone and gave him a call.
Okay, and tell me about that conversation. Called one time or two times?
No, I called the first time I called, he didn't answer, which is kind of normal with Alec sometimes. Sometimes he wouldn't answer because he was either on the phone or sometimes he was just in bad service, I think, and couldn't get a call to go through. So I'm pretty persistent. I call right back. So I called him, I didn't get an answer, and then I called him back. And, that was at 9:50, according to these records, 9:52 is when I tried to call and didn't get an answer, and I called back at 9:53 and said, hey, Alec, I got your text calling you back. How's your mama, you know? And he said, you know, she's, you know, doing about like normal, I think. I mean, she'd been doing poorly for years. And I told him I needed to talk to him. We had a case we were working on that involved a piece of equipment that had malfunctioned. And the company had preserved the equipment, but they weren't going to preserve it too much longer. We needed to get it inspected. And they were kind of pushing on us about when the inspection was going to occur. And I said, hey, we need to talk about this and get this squared away so we don't miss the chance to inspect this equipment. And I need to talk to you about some motions or something I've got upcoming that I need a little help on. And he said, hey, that's cool, but I'm about to get back home. Can we talk tomorrow? And I said, sure, fine.
That was some total of what he had to say was he's about to get home to Moselle, and can we talk tomorrow, correct?
Yes, sir.
We put States 451 up on the screen. Right here. Is that your writing right there?
That's my handwriting, yes, sir.
And that says Alex M, and those are the defendant's calls, is that right?
The bottom one is him calling me and me telling him I'm on the pool pump. Mm-hmm. The next one is me calling him back and telling me he's about to get to his mama's. Mm-hmm. And then the next one up here is me trying to call him after that text that he didn't answer. And then the top one is me calling him back after he didn't answer and talking to him for those couple minutes.
All right, and then that one in the middle, that's just an irrelevant conversation with some other person?
Just a friend of mine who I told his name was probably coming out today, so. I told him that he was on my phone.
We did scratch out his number.
That's right, yes, sir.
Now we did.
Yes, sir. I just felt like his name would probably come up today, and he should know that.
Just go about your evening after that? Did you just go about your evening after that?
Pretty shortly after that, I went on to bed. My wife stayed up, but I went on to bed shortly after that.
How'd you find out?
I was asleep. My phone's always kind of sit beside the bed. I could hear it buzzing, but I really wasn't paying it any attention. My wife comes in kind of, just hysterical. She says, "You got to wake up. You got to wake up." And I don't remember if she was on the phone with Randy's wife or Randy himself. She's trying to tell me what's going on, and I'm looking at my phone, and I've got a text from a person I knew in Hampton that's texting me saying, "Hey, give me a call. I got to tell you something before you hear it somewhere else." It was the person that was in the county government down there that I knew that was just trying to get word to me before I heard it somewhere else. My wife, I don't think I respond to that person or her text immediately. My wife's telling me what's going on. I just told her, I said, I'll get some clothes. I got to go to Moselle. We started trying to call our daughter right at about 11 o'clock. Started trying to call our children, tell them what was going on. I don't even know how much my wife and I spoke about it. I mean, she knew I was leaving. I got in the car, went straight to Moselle, grabbed some clothes, and went straight to Moselle.
John, how long does that take?
From Columbia, about an hour and 40 minutes or so. I mean, I called some different people on the way that I thought needed to know. I mean, repeatedly tried to call my daughter. She was extremely close. She is and was extremely close to Buster and Paul. And, we couldn't get her to answer, called her boyfriend, just repeatedly calling her. I think I talked to Randy on the way down, but I can't say for sure I did. But I know I talked to somebody in their family on the way down just to tell them I was on the way.
About what time did you get to Moselle?
About 1 o'clock in the morning.
Other family and friends were arriving then too?
Already had arrived, I believe. Yes, sir. I mean, when I got there, I went through the main gates. I could see. I don't know that I knew at that point that this had occurred at the kennels, but I could see that there was tons of activity there as I passed by to go to the main gate. And when I turned in the main gate, I was on the road headed up to the house. You don't go very far, and you can turn right to go to the kennels. I almost was going to turn and go down to the kennels, and I think John, Marvin, and Randy were walking out and kind of waved off and said, "Go to the house."
Is that where he went?
Yes, sir.
Was the defendant there?
He was, yes, sir. Yeah.
You talked to him?
I did. I walked in, hugged his neck and cried. Didn't know what to say.
Hugged his neck and cried.
Yes, sir.
A lot of people there coming out to support him, as you would expect, correct?
Yes, sir. There were a lot of the lawyers that he practices law with, several family members, some friends of his that I knew. There were a lot of people already in the house, yes, sir.
Did you stay there during the early morning hours as a friend, supporting your friend?
Yes, sir, till 5:30 or so in the morning. 435. I don't know. I mean, it's all, I mean, everybody was shocked and destroyed. And I mean, times I felt like it stood still. So I don't know exactly what time it was, but sometime 4 or 5 o'clock the next, that morning, everybody decided it would be best for Alec and Buster to go get some sleep, or at least try to, and not stay there that night. And so I went back to Bamberg and slept in my office.
Did you return to Moselle the next day after getting some sleep?
I did, about 9 o'clock that next morning.
Were you there as much as you could be at Moselle or wherever you were needed over the next few days in the aftermath of all of this?
Yes, sir. I was there almost entirely the next 2 days.
At any point, did you ever have any conversation with the defendant about what he did that night?
Not really, no, sir.
What do you mean by not really?
I mean, I didn't ask him. I didn't want to know what he found. I didn't want him to have to describe that to me. I didn't want him to have to relive it, so I didn't ask him about it.
Didn't ask him about it?
No, sir.
It's only natural.
Yes, sir. I mean, I was there as a friend, supporting him and his family. I didn't need to know the details. I knew all I needed to know is that two people that I loved were gone.
Certainly, we're going to ask him about the stupid issue with the fees in this time.
No, sir, not at all. Didn't know there was an issue with the fee. I mean, I did not know there was an issue with the fee at that time, so I didn't have anything to ask him.
Over the next few weeks, did you do what you could do to be a supportive friend?
I did. Yes, sir. I mean, I tried to call him even more often. If I was anywhere close to Hampton, I tried to stop by and check on him. I tried to make him go places and do things. Not much, but I felt like he needed to get out. You know, just, I mean, I was worried he was going to hurt himself. I mean, I was worried he was going to kill himself, just like I think a lot of people were, family and lawyers, his partners. And so I think we all talk regularly about keeping an eye on him, about being there for him.
After a few weeks go by, the shock starts to abate just a little bit.
It still hadn't abated.
Still hadn't abated. Just a little bit.
Yes, sir.
At some point, does the defendant call you about those fees?
He does. Yes, sir.
You remember roughly when that was?
Sometime around the middle of July.
What does the defendant say to you?
He tells me that he has not been able to put the monies into the annuities like he thought he could, that he's messed it up, and that the monies need to be paid to his firm, and that he needs to send the money back to me to run it through my trust account to write the checks to his firm directly.
You remember how that conversation came up?
I don't remember exactly how it came up, no, sir.
But he contacted you to say, hey, I messed up those annuities. I need to send the money back to you, correct?
Yes, sir.
Did he send the money back to you?
Not all of it, no, sir.
What did he send back to you?
$600,000 of the $792,000.
And in what form did he send that money back to you?
It came in two, the $600,000 came in two separate wire transfers.
Tell me about those.
I don't remember the dates, but I think it was July 15th. July 16, somewhere around in there. One came from Palmetto State Bank, and I think one came from Bank of America.
One for $350 and one for $250, correct?
Yes, sir, I believe that's right.
That was only $600,000, correct?
Yes, sir.
And you had dispersed to him directly how much?
$792,000.
Did you have a conversation with him about the fact that it was $192,000 short?
Yes, sir.
And what was that conversation?
He told me that he had already put the $192,000 away to where he wasn't going to be able to access it. I took it that he had already put it into the annuity and that it wasn't going to be available without some type of penalties or cost. And he said, I don't have the 192, but I'll be able to get it to you very shortly or soon. I don't remember if he said within a couple days or a couple weeks or what he said, but it was soon.
What did he want you to do, though, once this money came back in? Did he ask you to do anything?
To rewrite the checks payable for the fees to his firm.
Did he ask you to communicate with the firm at all?
He asked me when the money was back into the account if I could send an email that I was holding those monies so that they would know those monies were in the trust account.
All right. But you're $192,000 short, so what was his discussion then?
He asked me, he told me he didn't have the $192,000. And I mean, at that point, I know that I've got a trust account for which I'm responsible for. I've got money that's supposed to have been in my trust account payable to his firm for fees. That's my responsibility. And so I had to put $192,000 of my own money into my trust account to hold for the fees for his firm.
And how did you do that? How did you put $192,000 of your own money into your trust account to cover the defendant?
I wrote a check for myself and put it into my trust account.
And just quickly, explain to the jury why you have to do that. What is it about a trust account that you have to do that if you're going to send that email to the firm?
Because I can't tell somebody I'm holding money in my trust account that I'm not holding in my trust account. I'm responsible for that trust account. Trust accounts are money that belong to someone else that you're holding in a fiduciary relationship. And you're responsible to make sure that those monies are held and dispersed appropriately. And at this point, I'm hearing that I haven't dispersed or paid those monies the way they're supposed to be paid.
At that point in time, did he ask you to cover that money, or was that just kind of a given that he was short?
I knew I had to, and I think he asked me to, but I knew that I had to.
So you get the $600,000 from the two wires, and you write $192,000 of your own money.
Yes, sir.
And then you send an email to the law firm, is that right?
I send an email to Alec, yes, sir, that he tells me he's going to forward to his firm, which I, you know, ultimately found out that he did forward to the bookkeeper and one of his partners.
I'm going to show you States 349, see if you recognize that.
Yes, sir. This is an email I sent on Monday, July the 19th, 2021 to Alec.
Right. Is that the email you're talking about?
Yes, sir.
Your Honor, this time I'd move States 349 into evidence.
No additional objection, Your Honor. Submit it.
Can you read that email to the jury, please?
Sure. Alec, as discussed, I'm confirming that I am holding in trust $600,000 in the, and that's just redacted to take the gentleman's name out, the gentleman's case, and $192,000 in the, and that's redacted out to take out the wife's name, in the wife's case, which represent attorney's fees. I will continue to hold these monies in trust until I am instructed by you or your firm regarding payment.
After you sent that email, did the firm contact you? Did you have to disperse the money, or did that just kind of end the matter?
Not until September the 3rd when Lee Cope called me after they claimed that, after they say that they had discovered that Alec was stealing money.
Well, let's talk about the interim. But at that point in time, you sent that email and nobody's making any further inquiry at that point in time. Is that correct?
No, sir.
Right, and that money's just sitting there.
Sitting in my trust account.
Including your personal 192 that you wrote to cover Alec, correct?
Yes, sir.
Did you ever have a conversation about with Alec about when he was supposedly going to get you that money?
Yes, sir.
Tell me about that.
I know we talked about it one time. I think it was at the August convention down in Hilton Head that most of the lawyers that do what we do attend. I had begged Alec to come down there and for Buster to come with him at least one day to play golf with some of us so they'd get out and do something so Buster could do something normal. And I think it was while we were playing golf that I just said, hey, where do we stand on getting, on you getting me repaid? He told me that, you know, I knew that Maggie's estate would be tied up, and I figured that that was a delay. He told me that he was, you know, moving towards selling some property and that his father had, you know, had obviously just passed and that there would be some monies coming to him from his father's estate and that he was working on it and it, he was trying to do it as quickly as he could. He apologized for it taking longer than he said it would.
And he told you that he had tied up some money in structures or something like that and that's why he couldn't get to it right then?
That's what he told me, why he couldn't get the $192,000, because that he had already put it into, the way I understood it, he had already put it into the annuity and couldn't get it back out. I think once you put those monies away, is my understanding, is you can't just pull them right back out. It's not like a checking account or a savings account where you can deposit and withdraw immediately.
But that's what he's explaining to you, right?
Yes, sir.
So that conversation you had with him at the trial lawyers conference playing golf, that was when, roughly?
First weekend in August. Actually, it'd probably be that we normally try to play golf on that Thursday, so whatever the first Thursday in August is.
Not long after that, did you have another conversation with him about the money that you had covered for him?
I did.
And roughly when was that?
Sometime shortly after that, middle of August maybe, I called him up and said, I need to come see you and talk to you about something, and I went down and talked to him about this money. But it wasn't some, it was, I mean, it was about the money. I needed to be repaid. I mean, that's a lot of money to me, and I wanted to be repaid.
$192,000, that's a lot of money.
Yes, sir.
A lot of money to anybody.
Yes, sir.
I'll show you what's been marked as State Street 50. You recognize that?
I do.
And what is that?
So,
what's the date on that first?
August 17th of 2021.
Your Honor, at this point, I'd move State Street 50 into evidence.
No additional objection.
Submit it.
All right. Tell me about that document. What happened? What's your conversation related to that document?
Some point in time when I'm talking to Alec, I said, hey, I need to come see you in your office and talk with you about something. I don't even think I told him exactly what it was. He said, sure. So I went down and went in his office. I said, look, I hate to even talk to you about this and I hate to ask you this, but if something happens to you, you know, and I think I phrased it like if you get hit by a car or something happens and you die, I can't get repaid that money against your estate unless there's something in writing between us. I knew enough to know, enough of the law to know that you can't enforce an agreement with a person that's deceased against their estate unless you got some documentation of it. And I said, boy, I hate to even ask you to do this. And I was worried that he was going to kill himself, you know, still at that point. And I was worried about what that would, you know, was worried about what that would mean, more so on a human personal level, but also what that would mean about me trying to get repaid. And I said, I hate to ask you to do this, but can we do this? And he said, sure, no problem. I mean, that's our agreement, and sure. And so we scratched out, he handwrote it, three sentences, nothing formal or fancy.
This is on what day?
August the 17th, and I was in his office.
Hold on for me one second.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, we have you go to the jury room for recess. Please do not discuss the case.
All right, just out of abundance of caution, before we got to this portion of the witness's testimony, as your Honor is aware from the in-camera proceedings, he has a confrontation with the defendant, and the defendant tells him some things the witness here has a confrontation with the defendant at his mother's porch after receiving word about what the law firm had found. From the in-camera testimony, the witness has testified that the defendant, you know, admits the financial misdeeds, says he had a drug issue, I think going to rehab, and some things like that. And that is, I believe, on the early afternoon of September 4th. And then not long after that, he hears that the defendant was shot on the side of the road. And so we've had some discussions about the drug issue. So before listening to that testimony, I alerted the defense and wanted to make sure that that we had set our ground rules on that. And then, of course, the side of the road issue, which we've talked about earlier.
What ground rules did you set?
Your Honor sets the ground rules, and that's.
You take a break during questioning the witness to have a conference with counsel.
Well, I am seeking to admit that evidence, not only of what the defendant said about his drug use, but also to submit that not long after that he heard about the side of the road incident. And I out of abundance of caution, raised that issue, and I believe the defense was going to object, trying to give them the opportunity to do that in an in-camera setting.
All right.
For both of those, I think they are admissible. First of all, again, we're not offering any drug use, and we've had some discussion about that yesterday. We're not offering any drug use for the purposes of what's improper under 404. In this particular instance, the defendant himself identifies that as a reason for these alleged misdeeds. So not only is it not 404, it's just part of the res geste of his statement, which is part of what's been admitted.
It was admitted yesterday, so we're beyond that issue as far as the court is concerned.
All right. And then as far as the side of the road,
of which have not been disclosed, but the the email from Mr. Murdoch doing rehab was published by the defense.
Yes, sir. And then secondly, along with the side of the road, again, at this point in time, just going to be admitted that he heard about what had happened to the defendant. There are other circumstances that we talked about earlier that we would address at a later time. About the side of the road, which we believe is admissible and admissible under 404. I don't know that we need to have an in-camera proceeding at this point in detail about that, but I just, because all he's going to say is he heard that happen. But I just wanted to, again, and out of abundance of caution, we've gone this far. I just wanted to be, before I listed anything along those lines, just wanted to alert the defense and give them a chance to object.
All right. Mr. Griffin?
Yeah, we do object, Your Honor. First, he's not the proper witness to be testifying about what happened on the side of the road. He just hears it secondhand, so any information he has is just hearsay. In the in-camera hearing, he also provided his opinion that Alec must have tried to commit suicide, and that's improper. So first is hearsay, but more importantly, Your Honor, it is a bridge too far under the narrow exception that you've offered, that they're offering this evidence of financial crimes, that it's a motive for this alleged murder that he committed. And so the fact that whether it was an assisted suicide or they want to go further and say it's part of the same scheme and that it's a sympathy ploy, which the court hasn't ruled upon, and we don't think it is, meets the standard there, and it violates Rule 403. So for all those reasons, we object to it coming into evidence.
Do you want to proffer what Attorney Wilson is going to say about it?
I believe during his prior testimony in the in-camera hearing, and I certainly can do that, he testified.
I recall his prior testimony.
Yes, sir. And
which did not involve anything about a roadside shooting.
Well, and so I'll go ahead and proffer, Your Honor.
Yes, sir.
All right. So, Mr. Wilson, kind of jumping ahead, you had a confrontation with the defendant on September 4th when you drove to Hampton County to have a meeting with him on the porch of Alameda. Is that correct?
Yes.
All right. And pull the mic forward
yes.
a little bit. And without getting into all that detail, after that conversation, he made some admissions to you at that time. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
And just very quickly tell the court what he said.
He admitted or said that he had had a drug problem for 20 plus years, and that he was going to rehab. And then he said he had been, he admitted he had been stealing money.
Okay. And did he say anything about the 192 with you? Did he have a phrase he used for that?
Yes, sir.
What did he say?
You don't have to proffer this portion. You're indicating you're trying to get in, go beyond this into something else.
What time did this, yes, sir, thank you, Your Honor. What time did this conversation take place, roughly?
Mid-late morning, just before lunch.
All right. And that's on September 4th?
Saturday, September 4th, yes, sir.
After that confrontation, did you leave?
I did.
And where did you go?
I went through Hardee's in Hampton, grabbed a bite of lunch at the drive-thru, and then drove back towards Columbia.
Did you hear about anything related to the defendant within a couple hours?
I did. I got a phone call from Lee Cope. Might have been Randy, but I think it was Lee Cope that called me and said Alec had been shot in the head and was being helicoptered. I thought he said to Savannah Hospital. I know he said to the hospital in a helicopter.
That's as far as this witness would go.
And I sustained the objection as to this portion of the testimony. I agree with the defense. It's hearsay, and if it's and he's not the appropriate witness to testify on this issue.
Thank you, Your Honor. So obviously, yeah. All right, and you're a lawyer. You understand where to stop.
Yes, sir.
All right.
We'll take a recess for about 10 minutes.
That wraps up segment one of coverage of the trial of Alex Murdaugh here on the 9th of February, 2023, day number 12 of continuing court coverage. Press subscribe wherever you download podcasts so you don't miss any of our updates and breaking stories as we bring them to you. I'm Tony Bruschi. Stay with us.